Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Steelers Outpost Podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. It's July 14th, 2019, and other than being Bastille Day in France, Nicholas, do you know what today is?
Tell me. Tell the people what today is.
Today is the 100th straight episode of the Steelers Outpost Podcast. This is Tom from the Washington, D.C. Outpost. Nick joins me from the Houston Outpost. We are lucky to have P. Butch back for a reprise from his popular appearance during our beach episode 2 weeks ago. But first, we want to just bask in the glory that is 100 straight episodes. This started as a very
passion project.
I think, without doubt, you and I will be watching the Steelers forever, whether we have the podcast or not. But the fact that so many people listen now and have participated with us has made this just sheer joy.
It's the best. It's awesome. I think a lot of people use this catchphrase or this, I don't know if it's a cliche or not, but they use this description for why they started podcasts and all different kinds of mediums, but it's these conversations were happening either way. So we might as well record them. And I definitely think we've come a long way since episode one. And for all of you guys who listen, thank you so much for listening to the podcast and for supporting it. This really is just the beginning, though. We have a lot planned, even for the rest of the summer, and then especially going into next year. And our hosts, our podcast company, Armchair Media, also the Armchair All-Americans, they have some very big things cooking in the kitchen now. So we really are just at the beginning, and stick with us because it's only going to get better from here.
Speaking of our audience and people who participated, Mark from NoCal responded to the conversation we had with the week before last about rules we'd like to see changed in the NFL.
Oh, yeah.
And this was very interesting. It was totally off my radar screen, I guess just because it's not being talked about anymore. But he said, I'd love to see the quarterback slide rule go. And he said, I'll just read, if you take off running with the football past the line of scrimmage, you're a running back. Some QBs use that rule to their advantage and fake like they're going to have a slide just to get a couple extra yards. And the defensive players could get an injury going from 100% speed to zero, while the quarterback should be feeling the wrath of the defense if they decide to run with the ball. I take the point. I mean, a quarterback's going to pay if he tries to – if the assumption is the quarterback's angling for the sideline, and I guess basically the defender guides him there gently, like bringing a jet into the parking space, but the quarterback decides to cut back. He's still kind of safe, isn't he?
Yeah, that's such a lame move if a quarterback does that. There have been guys who have tried to basically bait defensive players by feigning like they're going to go out of bounds and then they cut back in field. Jimmy Garoppolo actually tried that last year and popped his shoulder out of his body and missed the entire year. So you could say karma got him or the defense got him. But either way, there sort of is this unwritten rule with quarterbacks before they slide or before they go out of bounds. You know, if the defense is going to protect them, the quarterback traditionally does not try to get those extra yards. I'm kind of with Mark. If he does abuse that trust from the defensive players and he does try to get the extra yards, then he deserves to get popped like anybody else. But obviously the NFL needs to protect the marquee investments because we don't want to see a whole season of, you know, some third string guy because quarterbacks are getting destroyed left and right. But quarterbacks should not be abusing that rule. I totally agree. That's such a lame move.
Well, look, I mean, I take your point. This is a business decision to protect the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
But do you get to use that play? I mean, you're having it both ways. We get to use this special play. They can't touch our quarterback. And we're going to let him sneak out, and you know, he's going to roll out and run to the sideline. And I take his point. Once you cross the line of scrimmage, aren't you a running back?
That's true. And if quarterbacks weren't allowed to slide, it wouldn't just affect the running plays in which quarterbacks are running around. It would affect the quarterback's mindset before he runs. So it would discourage some players from running because they know that they can get popped and maybe they'd have to throw a few more balls away, which would result in wins for the defense on that play. So it is an interesting thing to think about. It's definitely one of the rules the NFL has put into to blatantly protect the quarterback because we do want these guys playing. And I tend not to have a problem with it. I agree with them. I do want the quarterbacks to keep playing. I don't want people to get injured like that. But I also agree with Mark that, you know, if you're trying to trick the defensive player into thinking that you're going to slide or keeps running, that's not cool. And you should be hit with all the force of 1,000 nations.
Thanks, Mark. Keep them coming. That's good insight.
That's true.
One of the things, so we were thinking about a way to just look back on the last 2 years of things that have happened with the Steelers during the time we did this podcast. And interestingly, just a little Arcania, we did have this podcast going for, what do you think, 6 months before we went, you know, put it on the internet?
Yeah, we had a preseason, if you will.
Yeah, just trying out some different formats. But this was your idea that we come up with our favorite plays during our 2 year history of podcasting. Yeah. And I went back, I actually went back game by game, and I only got through 2017, by the way.
Yeah, that's impressive.
But I do have a full I pulled. I had a few that I pulled out.
Sure. Yeah. I just wanted to take a quick second to look at our favorite memories, the best memories of the high points over the past 2 years or the low points Steelers wise, whether that's a particular play or a particular game or even some off the field type of stuff, if that happened to be the case. But I think it's kind of cool that I wanted to keep it within the last 2 years because that's how long the podcast has been live. But it's sort of interesting to group Steelers history into 2017 and 18 because it's kind of an odd pairing, right? Like 2018 is sort of the end of the Killer Bees era. But we think of this era, in my opinion, as starting kind of in 2015, Le'Veon Bell's second year when the offensive line got its stuff together. Bell was a star by game one. You know, AB was already the premier receiver in the NFL, and the Steelers were off to the races, off and running. And you sort of think of it, or I do, I think of this era in one way as 2015 until right now, now that Bell and Brown and those guys are gone. But I think it's kind of interesting to look at it the past 2 years where Steelers didn't make the playoffs and then obviously had some disappointment in the year prior. So what did you find? What would you put up onto the memory board here?
This is not top 10 or anything like that. I think out of the gate, our very first podcast of a regular season game was against the Cleveland Browns. And the play that I pulled out, which was just a fun play where it was Cleveland 4th and 19 from their own 16. It was almost at the end of the first quarter when they were punting.
It was the beginning. And it was the third play of the game, right?
It was the third play of the game. Wow. They 12:44 in the first is what I have here. When Dirty Red blocked the punt and Anthony Ciccolo recovered it for a touchdown in the end zone.
That's a really good pick. I didn't think of that one. I was thinking of some higher profile ones, but I remember that. Yeah, the Browns were the Super Browns at that time. It was DeShone Kizer. Hugh Jackson was there. I think they had lost every game the year prior except for the one, and they would go on that season to lose, I guess, every game. But there was some hype about them because, you know, even everybody has hope. Even the DeShone Kizer-led Browns at that time had some hope. And the season opens up. Steelers kick off to the Browns. Browns go 3 and out, as usual, then get the punt blocked in their own end zone, and the Steelers score a defensive, well, special teams touchdown, I guess, on the first play of the, like, you know, not even 3 minutes into the season. That was a good way to start.
So I'll just go through a couple of these. And as I said, I went through every game and just looked for some highlights. This was our game against Kansas City. Steelers won 19-13. I don't know if you recall that. Of course you do. You probably remember when the water boy came out to the huddle.
I do.
Anyway, the scene was third and two at Pittsburgh's 49. There was 3 minutes and 34 seconds left in the game. Let me see if I can get the score at that point. It was 12-10 Steelers. And AB lines up. Am I allowed to?
Yeah.
Talk about a play that he was in. Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's a big part of all these great memories and the bad ones.
Martavis was lined out wide. AB was in the slot. And when the ball snapped, AB runs under Martavis. And Ben throws that pass to AB on the sideline. And Kendall Fuller tipped it. AB picked it. And Daniel Sorensen just like flew by. I mean, they had two guys on AB. And he ended up running the ball in for a 51-yard touchdown.
The thing that was amazing about that was Ben actually, he had been playing well that game. It had been a rough start to the season for the Steelers. I think the Chiefs were either undefeated or one loss, and I think they had beat the Patriots already. That was that long Kareem Hunt touchdown in the first week where everyone thought the sky was falling on the Patriots. But Ben threw it right to Kendall Fuller, and it went right through his hands, and AB was right behind Fuller, and Sorensen was on the other side of AB. So AB was squished in between two Kansas City defenders. The ball gets tipped about a foot in front of AB's face. He catches it with one hand, dips past Sorensen, and runs for a 50-yard touchdown. It's so hard to catch a ball that gets tipped close to you because it's coming really fast and the trajectory changes. So nobody can, you know, even the best people in the world can't catch those. And of course, he catches it with one hand and, oh yeah, then houses it. I miss AB.
We fast forward a few weeks to October 29th, the game against the Detroit Lions. And yeah. I don't know if you remember that. That was kind of a dogfight. Boswell had kicked a field goal in the third quarter to take us up 13-12. And with – let me just get my note.
On our own three-yard line.
Correct. 3 minutes, 15 seconds left in the third quarter. Ben DiJuju up the middle of the field hits him 27 yards out, and Juju continues to jet for, if you call that jetting, for 70 yards, outrunning three guys. You remember him running down the middle of the field almost until like the 10, just like outrunning
looking
these guys
behind
for
him.
The touchdown.
Looking behind him
while he's looking behind him.
Because he doesn't look that fast, and that was Juju's first long touchdown, and we kind of thought that would be a one-off, but then since then he's had two more of those. But Juju, you know, AB, when he was younger in his career, he would have these long touchdowns, and he was a great kick returner, punt returner, so it sort of made sense. When he got the ball in the open field, you knew he would be gone. Martavis, Sammy Coates even, Mike Wallace, those guys, when they got the ball in the open field, it was clear that they were jetting towards the end zone. Juju has more like a Hines Ward-type speed, which is functional. He's faster than he looks, but you thought for sure he was going to get caught on that play, but somehow he just finds a way to duck and weave his way into the end zone with his chest kind of puffed out in the air. He's basically arching his back just so the guys can't get him. And he gets all the way in the end zone and runs onto the sideline and locks up the training bike, because that was the week when Juju's bike got stolen. And that's kind of when the legend of Juju was born, because the bike thing took on a mind of its own. So that was huge for social media. Then you cap it off with, I believe, the longest Steelers passing touchdown in history. And then locks it up with the celebration. And from that point on, the Steelers offense, which had stalled up to that point in the season, the Steelers offense kind of unleashed legitimately right after that touchdown. And it sort of turned that season around.
Right. And I don't want to, I'll just throw out two more things because I could go on forever. But yeah, the one sort of Lynn Swan-ish kind of catch, even better than Lynn Swan, but when we were playing the Titans, and the Steelers won 40-17, but that was again, a very close game. The Steelers scored two touchdowns within 3 minutes, but the second touchdown they scored was a 10-yard pass to AB, where he caught it left-handed against his helmet in the end zone.
Well, that one was not a close game. That was just an absolute demolition of a Titans team that was really hot coming in, and they did score early, and I think they did have a 60-yard touchdown pass, which was a theme for the Steelers defense at that time. But yeah, that catch by AB in the corner of the end zone against his helmet, it's constantly replayed on all the NFL cut-ups. I believe AB had three touchdowns that game. And the first one was really nice. That was the game when they used the Skycam that was behind the quarterback, and the Steelers were wearing the Color Rush jerseys, which have proved to be a sign of good things for 3 years in a row. They won that game in big fashion after struggling before it. They beat the Patriots in them in those uniforms, and then another game I might be talking about soon here. But you and I loved the camera. The general public hated
it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they would. You get to see everything. By the way, the game was closer than you think, because it was 16-14 at the beginning of the third quarter, Steelers. the Steelers scored 17 points in the last quarter. So I don't know if the game felt in hand or out of hand, but you're right. AB had a 41-yard touchdown pass from Ben to open the game. But anyway, just the style, the way he caught that ball was magnificent.
It was amazing.
And please bring back the end zone camera.
Yeah,
and the last thing I'll mention, because I have high hopes for him this year, was Boz's, the 53-yard field goal he made with 4 seconds left against the Packers to win 31-38.
And another, what that brings up is the memory of, I don't know if it was 4th and 19 or 3rd and long, the incredible pass from Ben to AB to set up that game winning field goal. And you brought this up the other day when we sort of just did a quick little loose outline for our ideas for the podcast. But, you know, Boz's fall from grace has been pretty terrible, but people forget how unbelievable that season was for him. It was the best season I had seen from a kicker, at least in Pittsburgh. But I don't know if there's been many other kickers in NFL history who had like the number of game-winning kicks as time expired.
Right.
Yeah, and then
in a row, it was the Packers, Bengals, and Ravens 3 weeks in a row where he kicked a field goal at the end of the game to win.
He did it against the Colts as well. And you know what's interesting about all of those field goals, at least three of them, they were all set up, of course, by a miracle throw and catch from Ben to AB. Every time. It wasn't like, oh, Ben hit Jesse James. No, it was always Ben to AB, usually on 3rd and long. They did it. It was a catch and run for about 40 yards against the Indianapolis Colts. In that first game you were talking about against the Browns, it was that unreal catch into triple coverage near midfield against the Browns. Against the Packers, it was legitimately AB, one of his best catches of his career. It looked just like a normal toe drag swag situation where he dragged his toes on the sideline. But when you see it in slow motion, I mean, most people thought that he didn't catch it in real time, but it was just one of the most incredible toe drags. And it was crazy to see Boswell and Antonio Brown as a receiver have so many plays in 1 year to win the game in like the last 60 seconds of a game. It was sort of a serendipitous coming together of events for him. It reminded me of JJ Watt's great like 2015 season or whatever it was, where I thought he should have won the MVP over Rodgers because he had like 5 touchdowns, like 3 of them were on defense. He caught 2 touchdowns on offense. He had just these crazy numbers, which was like, JJ is a great player, but one of the best ever. But like things really came together for him that year. And I thought that that was true of AB and Boz during that 2017 season.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, like I said, I could go on. I looked at a lot of games. Why don't you
I'll
talk about
some
of the things?
Yeah, those were great. I'll give you one. Notice that we're doing a lot of 2017, right? 2018 was a painful year. But for me, this is probably my favorite memory. This was the happiest I was as a Steelers fan since the Santonio Holmes catch in that Super Bowl. And it's the Immaculate Extension. It's Ben to AB, surprise, surprise, stretching across the goal line on Christmas Day as time was expiring, no timeouts left, to win the game against the Ravens, which won the AFC North and sent the Steelers to the playoffs, knocking the Ravens out of the playoffs in the process, and just a sheer testament to the will of those two warriors. You know, he was going to AB no matter what on that play. They hurried up to the line of scrimmage with 12 seconds left instead of calling a timeout. And he just predetermined that he was throwing to AB because AB kind of ran a flat slant or like a little drag route. And he should not have been open, but he found his way in there. Ben threaded the needle and AB gets stood up at the goal line, and it looked like the Americans putting the flag in the ground at the moon while some aliens were trying to take them off of their intergalactic territory, or it's some sort of other analogy that I could get. But that picture of AB with Eric Weddle and two of the Ravens hanging on him, dragging him backwards, and Brown has his arms stretched out over the goal line is such an iconic picture. And the explosion of emotion I felt at that touchdown was incredible. You really felt like the Steelers were going to roll their way. They felt like Super Bowl bound at that moment. And not only was it such a It was just such an impressive individual play. It was to win a game. It was to win a game against the hated Ravens. Right when you thought that the rivalry might be waning a little bit, a lot of the mainstay players were not playing in the game anymore, but it turned out to be an incredible game, and they both turned out to be very good teams. So once again, Steelers-Ravens isn't dying. It was on Christmas Day, and it was, of course, Bend AB, the buddy cop film we loved for so many years. And it was also to cap off a huge comeback. The Steelers and Ben were playing kind of terribly. Well, they started out hot on the first drive and then really played poorly. And Ben actually threw an interception in the fourth quarter where we basically thought the game was over. And somehow, I mean, he rallied, and especially with AB, who had been held in check mostly that game, after, you know, that magnificent year he was having, to come back and to win that game like that. That was my favorite and just the most photogenic Steelers moment in a long time.
Yeah, I guess we could go on and on, and maybe we could, and it would be great if people sent in their ideas about best plays, best players, best memories over the last 2 years, and we can extend our conversation next week.
Yeah, hit us up. Let us know. Hit us up on Twitter. Hit us up on Instagram. Let us know what your favorite memories are. Those are just some of them. There are a lot of great memories, of course.
Yeah, of course.
And I think we did them all in 2017. So maybe I should think of what I want. I mean, Juju mossing Jalen Ramsey on the game-winning drive against the Jaguars this year, and then Ben running that in. The satisfaction we got of winning that Jaguars game against that hated team in a game that we should not have won. That was awesome. That was very satisfying.
Speaking of Juju, the Vontaze Burfict hit.
That's
spectacular memory.
Spectacular. Again, 2017. But yeah, so many. So let us know what you guys think. I was going to do the worst memories too, but let's end it on a high note. I think we can all agree. Oh, you know what? Actually, I was going to say this. Side note, worst memory is the Jaguars loss. That's the worst loss I've felt. Yeah. As a Steelers fan in a long time, probably since that 2001 AFC Championship game where Bledsoe beat the Steelers, where Steelers really should have won the Super Bowl that year. But that Jaguars game was so painful because, you know, they crushed us in that regular season. Ben threw the five picks. They were saying he's washed up. They talked a ton of trash. And we went down 21-0 to start the game in the playoffs. You just couldn't believe it was happening again. And then, you know, the defense was worthless at that time without Ryan Shazier. And so you really could only count on the Killer Bees. And they had their finest hour, really, against the Jaguars. And I guess that proved to be the last time they played together. But Ben, AB, and Le'Veon Bell were beyond spectacular. AB goes for 160 and two touchdowns on a sprained ankle. Ben, if you count the freaking lateral touchdown he threw to Le'Veon Bell, basically threw for 500 yards and six touchdowns against one of the great defenses of the time. And obviously Le'Veon was incredible, and for them to lose like that was so painful. But hey, at least they got a little revenge last year. Okay, and the last of the last of the last things that I'm going to say here, my real favorite memory was the incredible touchdown pass to Jesse James to beat the Patriots before it got overturned. Because that feeling was amazing after they went all the way down the field to score on the Steelers. And it's like, well, you got like 42 seconds to do something. I don't know what you're going to do. Passes it to Juju, who runs 60 yards, gets down to the 10 or whatever it is, throws it to Jesse James, and we're finally going to beat the Patriots in the most glorious fashion ever. And then what happens next, I guess, would fall under the category of the worst memories.
So like I mentioned, we are lucky enough to have P. Butch on the show today, so we're going to transition to that session right now.
As promised, P. Butch has entered the show. He was with us 2 weeks ago when we were at the beach, and we got a big spike in listenership at that point, so we thought we'd bring him right back. Hey, Pat, how you doing?
Doing well. Good to be back, guys. I'm a little late, and I apologize. The front of tire of my bike got stolen. Oddly enough, they replaced it with another tire. So should I be thankful that I guess my bike has a different deflated tire in front? I don't know.
They replaced it with a deflated tire. They just liked it. You had the Mongoose specials, and they gave you the old, what's the bike from the Sandlot? What's the bike that everybody likes from that age?
I don't know. But yeah, so I guess they took the time to steal the tire But then they also took the time to give me a new deflated tire. So
they thought that there was enough time to make this crime and give you reparations. That's crazy. Even Juju didn't experience that.
Well, at least I didn't get all my jewelry stolen like Le'Veon.
True that, but screw him. Anyways, after Juju's bike got stolen, things really looked up for him. He was scoring touchdowns left and right. So I'm actually going to take this as a good omen for you.
Maybe I'll be catching balls from Ben in about 3 months.
Well, no offense, but hopefully not, for our sake.
Something's gone very, very wrong if that's the case.
I mean, I know you can catch and run, but we just lost a really good guy on the outside. We're going to – yeah, anyways.
So – interesting story that this week, somebody else wants to get paid, and we are having maybe some deja vu of Le'Veon Bell. Melvin Gordon, running back of the Chargers, is up for a new contract or a year away from a new contractor. He wants to stay with the Chargers, but he has seen the previous contracts, and he is looking to be paid commensurate with those previous running backs, like Bell, Gurley, and right. Johnson.
So a couple things here is he actually came out after the story was dropped. He came out pretty much a day later and said that he's not going to report until he gets paid. So he's basically threatening to do a Le'Veon Bell situation. He didn't say explicitly that he was going to sit out an entire season like Le'Veon did, but he insinuated that unless he gets paid, he's not going to be there. And in addition to that, he wants to be paid like Bell, Gurley, and Johnson, all the top running backs in the league, which, by the way, I mean, that's ridiculous in its own right. Melvin Gordon is really good. A lot of people don't know about Melvin Gordon because he plays for the Chargers and they don't have any fans and they're on the West Coast and they have no city and they're men without a country. And he came in with Todd Gurley. Remember that they were supposed to be this great running back draft class, and he just got off to a slow start, so people forgot about him with how good Gurley got. But he's a great running back, easily a top 10 running back, but not quite like Bell, Gurley, or Johnson.
Yeah, I think he, you know, or Barkley, you know, and I you just look at the Steelers of this past year, and you know, I remember you saying always that Le'Veon Bell was the most important player on your offense.
Right.
And, you know, you look at this year, and I'm sure your offense would have been better with him, but there wasn't a massive step back when you took away Bell and you put in Connor, right? Like your offense right. Maybe not have been top three, but maybe it was top eight, or like, I don't know how you would put the stats there. And, you know, I just don't know, like Saquon Barkley, worth a lot of money. Melvin Gordon, great running back, not going to change. Like you can plug someone in, I think get like – almost equal production.
For sure. It's sure. And it's like you can get the almost equal production at a fraction of the cost. And we're a broken record here because we've talked about this a lot with Le'Veon. But what's cool is now we have a whole nother year of data, because we were talking about this during the season with Le'Veon, but we were especially talking about this last offseason when the expectation was they were either going to sign Le'Veon or lose Le'Veon or get franchised or whatever it is. So now you have a whole nother season. And you look at all the guys who got paid the most. So Bell was out of football for a year. We don't know how he's going to do with the Jets. For your sake, we hope he does okay. We hope he doesn't do bad. But you look at David Johnson. He lost an entire year after he got paid. And then the year he came back was last year, fully healthy. But the Cardinals sucked. They had no talent around him. They had no blocking. They had a rookie quarterback. And he was completely ineffective. He didn't like change the team around like a Saquon Barkley or like someone like an Odell Beckham Jr. at a wide receiver could do. You paid the guy and there's just only so much he could do, right? And then Gurley, he's probably never going to play a full season again. And when you look at all the games Gurley missed at the end of the year for the Rams, they put in a fat guy and they did just as well. Their running numbers actually went up. So you look at the Steelers and the Rams with pretty much – actually, there's a tweet here by Warren Sharp, our guy, the master of analytics. He writes a big football book every year. We shout him out a lot on this show. He is very much worth the Twitter follow. But he wrote on one of his threads here, literally the two most elite backs in the game, Bell and Gurley, had to be replaced in 2018, and the run game didn't suffer. In fact, the run game was gasp. More productive in 2018 with their absence. So that tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, I feel like it's fairly obvious. I think people, you can see how teams feel about this, by the way they're paying running backs. As you know, as soon as teams started to trend towards, splitting carries amongst running backs, the position has been devalued. But you only have so much money to spend, you know, and I'm such a proponent of, if it were me, I'd sink that money in the offensive line. You know, because I think a great offensive line, you see with your Steelers, like, can make a solid running back into a very good one.
Right.
I can't believe that this isn't just going to be a car wreck for Gordon. If you look, right. One interesting thing is he has the second most touches in football since 2015 among running backs behind Gurley. So he has a lot of wear on the treads, and his numbers aren't spectacular, even though he had a bump up last year. But it just seems like this is, I think Le'Veon won, maybe didn't win, but tied, right? I mean, he could have probably gotten more money with the Steelers. It just wasn't guaranteed. But it was virtually guaranteed.
Right.
I just can't see Gordon doing better than what he would if he just shows up and negotiates a typical running back contract.
So that's a great point. I think there are two big timing factors that go into this. Here's one negative aspect of the timing for Gordon is the NFL-wide situations with running backs over the past few years that we just outlined. The NFL has been wondering about paying running backs. Then a couple marquee guys have gotten paid over the last few years, and we've seen the results have not been worth it. When you talk about Gurley or Johnson or McCoy, who was another one whose numbers dropped, Freeman, who missed the whole season. So from that standpoint, I think you're right, Dad, about the open market and his leverage just being small, because people have realized it's just not a safe bet. But the one thing that he does have going for him from timing-wise is the Chargers are in an absolute window right now. This might be the best team they've ever had, aside from the one where they went all the way to the championship game with LaDainian Tomlinson and Antonio Gates. But this team is even more well-rounded. They're probably the most well-rounded roster in the entire league. They got really hot last year. And Gordon, he is like their Le'Veon Bell. I mean, it's like we said, we're not saying that all running backs are equal. It's just there's a law of diminishing returns. Are Bell and Gordon better than Connor and Austin Eckler? For sure.
Definitely.
But it's almost just staying on track here. He's a huge part of the Chargers offense. And the Steelers lucked out when he didn't play against them this past year. And the Chargers offense was crap against Pittsburgh. They got a couple of lucky bounces, and you saw how much he meant to them. So from that standpoint, the Chargers may just roll the dice to cash in this year to keep their continuity together.
How many more games do you think you win if you had Bell this past year?
I'd say the NFL is tough, man, but I'd say, two, but that's a huge swing. You'd be at least an 11-win team at that point, if not more.
Yeah.
I mean, also This is not really fair to compare because you don't know how the games are going to unfold. But we love James Conner. Some people accuse me of not loving James Conner. That's ridiculous. You should be jailed. Every human loves James Conner. Of course I do. I just try to keep it real about the talent of Le'Veon Bell. And Conner did fumble in the fourth quarter of two games, which led to points for the other team that we ended up losing or tying those games. So you can look at things like that. You can also look at the fact that Bell is good for two 200-yard dominant games every year that they always end up winning.
Yeah.
I mean, superstar, but I don't know. There's really no way for me to be able to tell that for sure. And Connor was awesome.
Yeah. Would you rather have had Le'Veon Bell or a Pro Bowl kicker?
Oh, God. a mediocre kicker, right. I would have settled for.
So, yeah, I know. If I'm the Chargers, I kind of, say, we'll let you walk. I forget what their backup running back situation is like.
Austin Eckler, and they drafted a guy, Jackson or something, in the first round. So it's a pretty solid – Eckler is he's like one of those really good second running back, sort of third down back kind of guy. Yeah. Small, incredibly fast, catches the ball a lot. Probably – you haven't seen a lot of success with those guys being the main load carrier, but they have talent. It's funny because whenever I have this discussion, I'm with you. This is what we're talking about. The evidence is just there that it's better to let these guys walk. But my opinion of what they should do is the same opinion I have with Le'Veon Bell or the Steelers.
Yeah.
Just keep them. Yeah, the window's perfect. Your odds of winning the Super Bowl, I do feel like, will go up I just had this number of like 10% in my mind.
If you have
a guy who never comes up the field,
what's that? You would pay him?
I'd pay him. I'd try and figure something out, maybe a short deal. Just realize that Philip Rivers is super old and I need all hands on deck. Because if you get rid of Gordon, like you do get worse, but you just don't get that much worse for the cost.
Right.
I'm putting all the chips in for a Super Bowl if I'm the Chargers. And that's what I said the Steelers should have done with Le'Veon last year.
Yeah.
And they tried to. Le'Veon just didn't want to accept
it. No, that's a good point. That probably is the call. You know, they do have a short window and, you know, the young studs they've drafted, you know, yeah, like Derwin James in a rookie contract still. So just like when you have young stud talent on rookie contracts, yeah, I guess you got to go all in. That's what all these teams are doing now, and it's paying dividends.
I'm with that. And the last thing I'll say here before we probably move on, one thing I was thinking is maybe running backs need to realize that they're less in line with like receivers or quarterbacks and more in line with like a great guard, because I'm never trying to argue that the running back talent level is even, because I do think Bell and Gurley and Johnson are just leaps and bounds above other players. And obviously Saquon Barkley is leaps and bounds above other human beings who have ever walked the planet, but you get a lot of I'm not saying that the talent level is even, just the slope of the talent decrease is easier to handle than a receiver. Like you can't just plug a receiver in and have him do Antonio Brown's job. It's a trickier job out there on the outside. And the running back gets the benefit of having the five guys in front of him, the linemen really help him out. So he's really more part of a unit. And it's funny, like with the excellent guard, they don't get paid like the tackles who have to play the one-on-one. But we all know David DeCastro is our best offensive lineman and he's super valuable. But Dad and I have had this discussion a lot. You know, the whole, you know, getting to the Super Bowl is highly reliant on injuries. And we've had the discussion, if you had to lose one position, what would it be? Like, well, probably like guard or running back, because you can plug people in rather than a quarterback or a tackle or a receiver. And you're just screwed because they're in isolation.
I'd almost compare him to a slot receiver, you know, like a running back. I'm thinking of,
right.
You know, just hating the Patriots and watching them. You know, when they got rid of Wes Welker, they plug in a Danny Amendola – or not Dan – Julian Edelman and Danny Amendola. It just seems like it's easy to find some of those quick guys that you can put in the slot, and then there are a few very elite ones. And
you know why, too? It's because all these positions we're talking about with guard, running back, and slot receiver, it's not based on one-on-one matchups like outside receiver is.
Right.
Or tackle. It's like, yeah, you do get one-on-one matchups, but you also get the benefit of a system or other linemen around you, rather than if you're Odell Beckham Jr., a lot of times your job is like Xavier Rhodes is on the other side from you. You just have to beat him 20 times today.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Have we solved it? Should we call Melvin?
Let's call Melvin.
Or do you want to call the Chargers?
Chargers. Actually, we should probably call the Chargers.
Yeah, right.
In 2011... the NFL owners locked out the players for 132 days. The lockout ended on July 25th. And one of the points of contention is that the owners were pushing for a longer season, if you remember this conversation or this debate. That is back again. The owners are looking to extend the season. Did they state 18 games?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're looking to push this out to 18 games. So it's just a reminder that the contract, the current collective bargaining agreement ends after the 2021 season. There are noises obviously getting started to negotiate that now.
I remember with the CBA negotiations, hard to, you know, like to not blame the players just being greedy for money. You know, I just can't remember the ultimate for the Jets was Revis, who was, I think, had 2 years left in his rookie contract and held out until he got a new one. And you end up hating the players because of it. But then you look at something like this and you're like, man, the owners are probably worse. I don't know why you need an extra two games. I think the only argument is money. I think the fact that you have a limited amount of games, 16 games, is one of the reasons football is so appealing and popular in the States, because each game matters so much. So I don't really know from a fan's – you know, it's two more games, so that's great as a fan. But I don't know. I don't think you – I'd keep it at 16.
Why 16?
Everybody would, too.
but why is it 16 and not 14?
Right. I mean, well, it used to be 14.
The season used to be 14. Used to be 14. And the other question, I guess one of the points is, and of course it's about money. I don't think anybody's hiding from that, but the argument is that both the players and the owners will benefit. The question is, what about those four preseason games? And we have a podcast wrapped around this, and I can barely get myself to watch these whole things now.
That's actually part of the argument, is the preseason has gotten so watered down, particularly over the last years, that it is unwatchable. And Roger Goodell has been making comments for the past few years kind of insinuating that. He says, like, you know, these preseason games aren't up to the quality that we are accustomed to putting out at the NFL. And that's one of the reasons why he's going to use that as leverage to say, listen, people aren't watching these things as much anymore. Over the past few years, the trend of sitting your players, it's really gotten almost out of control. And I mean, here on the podcast, we're always talking about it. Like, don't play Ben. Give him one series. We don't want to see them play. I mean, we lost Marquise Pouncey in the preseason. You lost Swisham in the preseason. And entire seasons were compromised because of that. There's really not a lot of benefit. So Goodell is insinuating that you want two higher quality games instead of the lower quality games. But at the same time, one of the strategies they're pitching to get this 18 game season done is there will be a 16 game limit for players. So you would have to sit everybody for two games a year, and there would be gamesmanship on deciding when to sit people or when not to sit people. And I think that's the most hilarious oxymoron you could possibly have. So we're going to have to sit Ben Roethlisberger and watch Josh Dobbs for two games throwing to God knows who. Because of a rule? You're volunteering for that? That's lowering the quality intentionally. So that's just so dumb for me, and it's going to create so many weird situations when you get down into the year with deciding how, you know, the Patriots will be cheating and say somebody's injured when they're not injured. Oh, we counted it for our two games, and people are going to leverage that system. But overall, to me, that's stupid. I don't want to see the people sit. I want to see the best players in the world play every week. That's why I don't watch college football that much. That's why I don't watch the AAF.
On the other hand, with just a little bit of an open mind, since all we're doing is talking about it, looking out with it, it would be really interesting. You talk about gamesmanship. That's not necessarily a negative. This is fantasy football at its maximum. You think about what it's going to do to bettors. First of all, are players going to have to declare who's going to be sitting out and how far in advance? And trying to plan a game based on a roster, you're not exactly sure who's going to be on the field, would be really interesting.
The strategy is interesting, but I feel like the only reason they came up with this is probably to fight the glaring hypocrisy of trying to protect the players from concussions and injuries and then pitching an 18-game season. And I think that's the struggle, like, for me. And, I have different opinions than I'd say the majority of the populace on the stress on these concussions and injuries. But I think if that's the way you're going to go, you can't just sit here and then pitch an 18-game season. The only reason they're doing the strategy gamesmanship thing is because they know that they're clear hypocrites, and so they have to, you know, show that they care somehow about the players, which they don't.
Well, if the owners are hypocrites, so are the players. It's not a secret anymore. They still let them play the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, who's to blame here? They're playing a game where they're clearly at risk for CTE and, you know, early dementia, yet they keep showing up because of the money.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Right, so you're going to make it more and more dangerous? I mean, it's here's the thing is that the 18 game, well, actually, I just totally lost my train of thought because I'm so angry about it. The only way I could see this being interesting is if we get into a Minority Report situation where people are stealing other people's faces and you think that Juju's actually sitting for two games and like, wow, James Washington's having a great game. Well, guess what? It's Juju in a number 13 jersey. But it'll be the Patriots who figure that out, so we're all screwed anyways.
Well, both sides are using different estimates of injury. So the owner's saying that players who have played at least three games in the NFL last 4.2 years, and there were only 2,800 injuries last year that caused players to miss time. You look at the NFLPA, they said that there were 4,000 injuries, and the estimated average career span was 3.3 years. So, you know, these both sides are trying to justify a position based on these so-called statistics. Who knows what's an injury? I mean, you know what an injury, if they lose time, is. But I'll go back to my point. Forget about the hypocrisy. Both sides, the players, I think I have to lean on them a little bit more because they are the ones getting injured and they're willing to forego money. In other words, they would prefer the 16-game season and forego the money that would be coming their way too if you extend the season to 18 games.
You know, if you extended it to 18 games, what might be a good idea to fight that also is to maybe introduce an extra bye week. You'd elongate the season.
That's a good point.
You know, and then the extra bye week would give players more time to rest. You could, could combat a spike in injuries as the season progresses.
So that's a 17-game season then, right?
No, 18 games, but they just get an extra bye week. So you know, then that's maybe 20 weeks of football.
Right, and there's a positive to that. I mean, the NFL's trying to make the calendar year-round. Well, I remember what I was going to say earlier before I lost my train of thought there. When you were talking about the glaring hypocrisy of – first off, I don't need numbers to tell you that it's going to be more dangerous playing more football games against the most athletic, hard-hitting humans in the history of humankind. The injuries are going to go up. There's no debate there. But the hypocrisy is hilarious to me with all the emphasis on player safety, which I've always said is primarily a function of money because they took some huge PR hits when the concussion movie came out, was the big sort of turning point in all this. And when they started changing more rules, when it was found out that the NFL kept the concussion findings from the players and from the general public. And basically the punishment the NFL took for that was just a shrug, literally nothing. And we kept continuing on with this. Right. But I've never thought that they're truly interested in protecting players. They're interested in making money, and they were going to lose the money because of the PR hit they were taking from all this concussion stuff. You know, healthcare for the rest of your life, that would be more along the lines of being interested in protecting players. But they were trying to pitch this 18 season game around 4 years ago or more. And then the movie came out, and then all the other stuff happened and the Kaepernick stuff happened. So they actually pushed this under the rug and chilled out on it. But they were starting to push really hard for the 18 game season a little while back. And it's all just PR related, in my opinion.
I have a solution if you care to hear it.
Yeah.
Do us, DT.
What are we here for?
Games 17 and 18 are flag football.
I like it.
With three Mississippi out front.
Do you know, speaking of the hypocrisy, do you know anyone who's like, Roger Goodell, big fan, like him a lot.
Great guy. James Harrison.
Doing a great job. Yeah, the owners. I mean, I guess you're not supposed to know who the owner is or the commissioner is of a sporting any sport, or you're not supposed to have an opinion on him. But I feel like everyone hates him. The best is that there's NFL drafts when he gets booed.
It's the best.
Yeah.
But because and it is, you know, he's the figurehead for a lot of other people who are making decisions too. But just he is the leader. And if there is one thing you can say that's pretty terrible about him is just the inconsistency. You know, everybody's going to dislike a leader of any operation that big. But just the debacles on the way they punish people and they suspend people when you look at, you know, Ray Rice compared to Tom Brady deflating footballs and their just total inability to handle any of those situations and
right.
How tone deaf they are to social issues. And they screw that up over and over again. And when they were finally over the Kaepernick thing with the anthem and everything, and then they're so dumb to go make a new rule where you can't kneel about it. So you were going to be fine. People had stopped kneeling. You brought the own problem back to your door. So they're definitely a bit bumbling as far as that goes. But anyways, I, at the end of the day, I'm with you, Pat. What makes the NFL, we talked about what makes football so great, and it is the, you know, having less games and more, and each game means more because of that. And I know what you're saying, Dad, which along the lines of, well, why isn't it 14 or why isn't it 18? But I don't think that there's anything wrong with the way they're doing it now. You're introducing a bigger injury risk, and I have no interest in seeing two games a year without the starting quarterback of our team.
That sounds horrible.
But we do have to suffer through a very long offseason. Even though they're trying to add these events, it's really hard to get excited about the combine and those kind of things. So I'll double down on what Pat said. Add another bye week or split the season. You know, maybe have an entire month off and then drag this thing out through February.
That it doesn't go all year. That's what makes it more special. That's what puts the pressure on. And also keep in mind this, there will be more injuries. And if you get a bye week, it doesn't do anything for a torn ACL, which we're going to see a bunch of them because they happen every single week. The playoffs right now are already diluted. The NFL playoffs, I don't think that they're at the top of the list in the pro sports sphere as far as game to game having good games. Like, there's a lot of blowouts in the playoffs and there's a lot of injured people, and so many seasons in the NFL are really decided by who's the healthiest at the very end there. And we saw the Steelers 3 years in a row get screwed because by the end of their playoffs runs, they had maybe one of the killer bees playing. Everyone was always injured, and you're going to get more of that. It's just science. There's going to be more torn ACLs. There's going to be more broken clavicles or whatever, and you're going to water down the playoffs the longer you take to get there. So I just think that this is actually going to water down a lot of stuff. And it's just, there's only one benefit, is that the owners make more money, and I guess the players can make more money on a roll of the dice.
I do like the playoffs. UT.
I love the playoffs.
Even though you do have some bad games, I mean, you look at like the baseball playoffs, and it takes. I know, it just takes nothing. You have, you know, the play-in game and then four teams. And so it is fun to have the six teams, I think, in each conference.
Of course. I'm just saying that there's a lot of injury and atrophy by that point. And you even saw in the NBA playoffs this year with Golden State, like that championship was kind of useless because we didn't really get to see them play against each other at full strength. And that's more what I was talking about. Obviously, the NFL playoffs at the end of the day are the best because you want to see who's going to win the Super Bowl, and there's so much more pressure and it's one game and you're eliminated. So from that standpoint, they're awesome. But from the standpoint that there's a lot of injuries, and when you look at like the NHL or something like that, it just seems like every game is, I don't know. I'm rambling on there.
All right, we're starting to go in a circle here. Let me ask you this, Nick, what are the chances that the NFL will be playing 18 games in 2 years?
I don't know what the chances are. I really don't. But, you know, if I was feeling lucky, I'd bet on it. And I'd bet on it at MyBookie, MyBookie.ag, right? The NFL preseason kicks off with the Hall of Fame game on August 1st. And so soon we'll have that regular season NFL and college football action back in our lives. That means it's time to make an account at the best online sports book known to man. That's right. I'm talking about MyBookie. Sports betting is exploding in popularity. It's about to be legalized everywhere too, so you better get in the action. If you want to get in on that action with a trusted company that's been in business for years, MyBookie is the place for you. With an easy, no-hassle mobile site, 24/7 customer service, and bets on every sport and prop imaginable, MyBookie provides a fun, safe betting experience. Maybe you think Drew Brees and the Saints get their revenge for the terrible blown call in last year's NFL championship. That's part of the copy. By the way, the armchair guys, I know they're Saints fans, so I wonder if they had any hand in that. Or maybe you think Tom Brady and the Patriots win an unbelievable seventh Super Bowl. We got to talk about getting that mind changed out of our version. Let me redo that one. Or maybe you think Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers win an unbelievable seventh Super Bowl. Why not make money when your prediction comes true? If you deposit today, MyBookie will give you 50% deposit bonus. That's right. You put in $100 and they'll give you 50. You put in 1,000, they'll give you 500. It's that easy. Football weekends are the best, but they're even more thrilling when every touchdown can win you more money. So go to mybookie.ag and sign up today with promo code OUTPOST25. At MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid.
Hey, listen, last 2 weeks, our episode when we did it at the beach brought back a memory. Do you remember before we were in South Rehoboth, that we were in that North Beach house? The famous weekend where there was no window on the boys' room. So it might have been the Super Bowl. What do you think it was, 2008?
That would have been 2000. And so it was a summer. I was going into freshman year college. So that was 2003.
Whoa. Okay. Time passes fast. But I remember.
I was 13 years old. I was about to turn 13 years old. I was 12.
You two guys were stuck in a bedroom with no curtains, which is the kiss of death for two teenagers or virtual teenagers who need to sleep until 1 p.m. every day. But so there would, this sun would come streaming into that bedroom and you guys just cover your head with every blanket and pillow in the room. But the most fun part about that week was that I was introduced to Blade. So we would, things would settle down and about 11 p.m. I'd see you guys, I'd see you catatonic in the light of the television screen. And I don't even know how we got Blade at that time. Maybe somebody actually had VHS tapes.
Well, wait, hold on. It's actually a little bit more formal than that. So that summer is the summer where I was going into manhood, according to our family, because I was going to be a teenager. And you, Dad, said you brought a couple DVDs to the beach saying, it's time. It's time for you to be christened. It's like the Catholic bar mitzvah, if you will, of the Serena and Medina Butcher family here. And you said there are a couple movies that you've been telling me for years that I was going to watch when the time was right. And the time was right. So you brought, I don't know if I should mention them or not. You brought a couple of them. And then Pat brought another one to the fold. He said, this is the greatest movie I've seen in a long time. It's called Blade. It's Wesley Snipes. He hunts vampires and it's got great music and it's just the coolest movie ever. So that's how we got introduced to Blade and Blade 2. But it was a formal occasion that you had basically set up for me to pass into manhood, if you will.
Well, I felt like vampires watching Blade because the whole house was asleep and it was like 10 or 11 or midnight. And the three of us were just sitting there with only the TV on watching Wesley Snipes just kill a bunch of vampires. Oh, yeah.
The blue glow flickering on our faces. So I'm 58, and I think those of you in my vintage, I hope you'll agree with these. I mean, I don't think anybody should go through life fat, drunk, and stupid. So Animal House was number one on the list. I think you've got to watch that movie. What did you guys think about it? What do you think about it today?
Wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I'm going to tune out there for a minute. Have we officially established here that we're doing a list? We're doing the three. We're all going to give our three essential movies, like coming of age movies to show your son when he's growing up, just like we did that one summer. So number one for you is Animal House, right, Dad?
Yeah.
Well.
Are we going to go in order? Each of us give our three, or do we want to each give our first, then second, and third?
Well, Animal House is on mine. I would agree with that. I guess I didn't answer your question though.
Why don't we do Dad? You do your three first, and then P. Butch, and then I'll do it. We'll go in order age and generation here.
My top three, and this is 1A and 1B: Animal House and Caddyshack, and then I added Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I knew you were going to add Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I love it.
Oh yeah.
For multiple reasons, but let's face it. I mean, I can quote Animal House and Caddyshack almost verbatim. I think a lot of people can't even your age. Just so many good lines from those movies, and I learned so much about life from them as well. None of that stuff in Animal House actually happened in any of my four colleges that I went to.
Yeah, well, I went to school in New Orleans, and I can say I'm glad I saw the movie because some of it did prepare me for surprising realities.
The lines are great. The scene where they go visit Dean Wormer and he's reading off their GPAs is incredible. Mr. Daniel Day has a grade point average. Whatever the guy's name was, the redhead with the motorcycle.
So those are good. They still hold up. They're like, you know, a lot of movies are dated from the way people talk or the way they're filmed and everything like that. But there's just
a story.
Yeah. What was that?
I'm sorry. It's a 250 yards. He'll use a 5-iron.
That's Caddy.
I'm going to block
her. Are you talking about when he's hitting golf balls at the ROTC guys?
He's swatting I'm on Caddyshack. That's when Bill Murray is swatting the heads off of flowers, talking to himself.
I mean,
that one is like, it's almost artsy in the humor. It's almost British. So, and some of the funny subtleties and how it's like, there's not really a plot. There's just all these funny little situations and one-liners, especially from Bill Murray, who I'm pretty sure ad-libbed the entire movie. I might be speaking out of no knowledge there, but I think he did actually ad-lib like a tremendous amount of the movie. And it's just, it's got this weirdness and this freshness. You do drugs, Danny? Yeah. Every day. Good, 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 good. And Chevy Chase, that quick wit. Yeah, so that they still hold up today. And yeah, they got some debauchery in them as well, which was pretty cool for me as a 12-year-old to get introduced to that. Now I've seen them all those countless times since.
It is. I think that's a really good list, UT.
It is.
Thank you.
Nick, John?
Yeah. I mean, I love it. It shaped my life for sure. So they'd be on my list as well. But I picked three different ones. P. Butch, why don't you give us your three?
So I definitely, on my own, I'd agree with Caddyshack and Animal House. And the thing about those, Caddyshack and Animal House are like a Motown song. They're like a Beatles or Tom Petty. They are movies like those songs that people will be listening or watching for generations. You know, they're passed down from generation to generation. So Animal House and Caddyshack would have to be on there. What's funny is I feel like I found Animal House, I've watched it, probably over 10 times, and only once passed after college, because all the times I watched prior to college, hilarious, loved the lines, great movie. And then I watched it after college and I laughed, and then I got sad. It made me really miss college, but I mean, that's got to be one of them along with Caddyshack. I don't know why Caddyshack is on the list. Animal House makes sort of sense because it's, you know, it is college, that time before you're entering
right the passage.
But Caddyshack isn't necessarily that, although I guess Danny, the caddy, is sort of in that stage. And it's funny, I asked my father what his three were, what his top three were, trying to prepare for this podcast. He said those two. And then he said, which shocked me, Karate Kid. Dad, we haven't talked about Karate Kid in like 25 years. How did this make the list? And he was like, I don't know. It's just a great movie.
Wax on, wax off,
baby.
I mean,
sweet delight.
I don't think I've quoted Karate Kid. It's a good movie. I remember the kick thing, which, UT, I love that story of the fight between the football player and the Karate Kid at your college.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You want to tell it? Have you told it on the podcast yet? Well, tell it for any new listeners.
So there is a there's a guy who played football in high school. I think he was like a lineman, a defensive lineman. He's a big guy. And there was a guy from China on our floor who apparently knew karate or some sort of martial art. And these two guys got into it one day and decided, instead of having a fight right there, because we were gentlemen, of course, they decided to meet, sort of like when you're in high school, we're going to meet you in the Sears parking lot after school. So a day later, they met in this football field, and the football player, you know, the guy from China gets set. The football player walked over and punched the Chinese guy in the face, and it was over. It's sort of like, remember in Indiana Jones where Harrison Ford's getting chased, and he's at the precipice of a cliff, and that guy pulls out two cutlasses and he waves them all around. And then Indiana Jones just pulls his pistol out and shoots him.
It's the perfect analogy right there.
So that's what I'm seeing Ralph Macchio or Macchiato doing his little thing where he lifts both hands up and his foot up. And then just – if this is a real reality, somebody just walks up and just punches him right in the face.
Yeah, of course. You have no balance. You're on one freaking leg.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
So my dad's the underdog story. And I said, well, what, Rocky? Rocky's, I feel like, the underdog story. And as a sports movie, I feel like it is the sports movie, the underdog sports movie. You know, you have Remember the Titan.
For sure.
You have other ones that I can't think of now.
You do have other ones.
Like Ladybugs with Rodney Dangerfield. Horrible movie.
I hated that football movie. But you're right. Rocky is like a colloquialism at this point, if that makes any sense. I mean, it's like everybody knows who Rocky is.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's time for Rocky, I think, to sit down. Rocky Balboa was one of the most depressing movies I've ever watched because everyone was so old.
Stop getting punched in the head.
Well, Pat, you're talking about the original Rocky, right? I mean, that I remember seeing that for the first time. It was one of the most inspiring movies. Everybody walked out and started wanting to fight.
It was incredible.
So I think that's a good pick.
And
by the way, when you guys were talking about movies like that, it made me think Rocky, Rudy.
Yeah.
Movie.
I'm Rocky over Rudy.
Me too.
Personally. Yeah, I wouldn't add Rudy to the list. It just sort of –
Rudy's kind of depressing.
The thing with Rudy is, like, this kid trains his whole life to just play like 4 seconds of football.
One down.
And, yeah. And the thing is, it is a true story. Apparently, Rudy's just like a drunkard. He hangs around back then and tries to pick up college girls, which also
it's true. It's like the saddest movie. I can't watch that movie. But you're right. But we're sort of joking because Rudy was probably the other one when you hear that name, Rudy or Rocky there. But yeah, I like Rocky as a pick. That's a great pick.
The one, and then one thing I'd like to add, if there are any listeners out there who have an attachment to the 1969 Amazing Miracle Mets, baseball was a bigger thing back in the day. I agree with everyone on the podcast that it just doesn't interest me anymore. But the movie Frequency is a great father-son movie, and it's sort of a time piece as well. My dad's a massive Mets fan, loved that 69 team. And so I feel like that's one that meant a lot to us. I don't know if that would end in the top three in general. But
well, honorable mention.
Honorable mention.
Nice. All right, this is some more great picks there. I guess I can roll out my three here. So I tried to use three that are really from my generation. And Pat, you're 5 years older than me, so we're in the same generation, but and we have the same references because we've made sure of that over the course of our lives. But I think that in our family, the list that you guys put out, I mean, that's still what I'm going to show my kid at some point. The kid's watching Caddyshack and Animal House, and they're going to be watching it until the earth burns up in somewhere in outer space. But I picked three that are really representative of sort of my adolescence. And number one is my co-favorite movie of all time. My favorite movie of all time is Blade and Blade 2. They're the greatest movies ever made. I consider them one piece of art, one work. Oh my gosh, I realized neither one of you put Blade on there. Oh, so I guess I got to put it on mine. I made a list assuming that Blade would go on there because of the list we made. But well, we know what number one is: Blade and Blade 2. They're a package deal. It's the greatest movie ever made. It's the greatest. We had my freshman year of college. I had just met the rest of the guys who are in my band and I play music and run our businesses with and all that. And they were having a heated argument over like David Lynch and Wes Anderson and some of the greatest directors and Scorsese and which was the best movie and which ones were overrated, and things were getting heated. And I was just kind of chilling, doing something else, playing guitar in the corner or something like that, until I had had enough and I couldn't take it anymore. And I started chiming in here and there, like, the movie is boring. Oh, I fell asleep in that. Oh, it sucks, blah, blah, blah. So they got fed up eventually and said, okay, what's your favorite movie? And without hesitating, no, not even a single second pass, they said, Blade. Incredulous that someone would ask me that question. And the room just erupted, just died in laughter because they're talking about all these art movies. So I'm like, yeah, I like the vampire one.
You know why? Because I'm a man.
Because I'm a man. And they're laughing. I'm saying, what? You don't like Blade? And they all said, no, of course we love Blade. We just didn't. That sort of came out of left field. But honestly, they're the most watchable movies ever. They're done really well in terms of the action sequences are incredible. They know what they are. They're fun action movies. The second one is directed by Benicio del Toro. So that's got a lot of artsy aspects to it as well. But it is just a movie that I can rewatch over and over again and always have fun with. So I guess that's number – they're all number one. But really, number one is Blade and Blade 2, and the co-number one, so number 1A, is obviously Anchorman, the seminal movie of my time. It goes without saying. Anybody my age – so I was born in 1990. If you're anywhere around my age, you can quote the entire movie. I mean, don't act like you're not impressed. I'm just going to walk the situation off here. It's actually the pleats, the pattern of the pants. I'm taking it back to the pants store right now. But Anchorman is a movie where there is not a single – it's the dumbest, smartest, best movie of all time. There is not a line in there that you won't laugh at. Like, the more you watch the movie – and I've probably seen it over 20 times, but I haven't seen it in years just because, you know, it's on a loop in my head. But every line is funny. Like –
it's your Dumb and Dumber. For me,
exactly.
Yeah,
sure. By the way, very surprised you didn't put Dumb and Dumber on yours.
I almost did. Yeah.
Yeah, there's not even a line in Anchorman that is like functional just to move the characters from one scene to another. Every single word that comes out of anyone's mouth is funny in that movie. So that'd be my 1A. And then number three for me, is Pineapple Express. Absolutely. So wow. For me and my friends in the band, that came out in like when I was in high school, and that's my other just funniest movie ever. And I think that that movie, you know, you look at these movies and I'm listing like comedies and dumb comedies and stuff like that, but undeniable classics, but they're smarter than you may think they are, right, at first glance. So Pineapple Express kind of came out of left field. Anchorman and Zoolander, they put in this era of comedies that were like extremely silly, like beyond silly, super dumb for the sake of being dumb, but very funny. Pineapple Express has a lot of those moments in there, but they also melded it with like a serious action movie. And Seth Rogen's goal for that movie was to make people actually sort of, you know, emotionally invested in these characters, no matter how ridiculous that the situation was. Whereas Anchorman or Zoolander, you're not really invested in the characters. You're just having fun. And then there's a serious, awesome, like 90s style action movie that's weaved in with it. And then after Pineapple Express, a lot of movies started copying that archetype. And again, it's just line for line is amazing.
Are these your top three movies of all time? Or are they top three father-son movies, or are they both?
They're kind of both, okay. Because I was joking about the artsy movies later, but I do have a lot in my actual top 10 favorite movies. I have a lot more of kind of artsy type of deals, or there's some more serious ones in there as well. But I wanted to make the list today kind of resemble what happened that summer in terms of like, you need to show this to your kid. You need to know this movie. You need to know these references. And those three are there. And I guess my honorable mention, sort of cheating to him four here, but those are definitively my three. And then my Blade 1 and 2 are one movie. They are the same thing. They're one piece of art. I thought somebody was going to choose Blade, so the other one I was going to say would have been another double, Kill Bill 1 and 2, which is Quentin Tarantino, Uma Thurman, and I was going to put that one on intentionally to kind of bridge the gap into, hey, if I was going to show my kid some movies, I'd also want him to get into some of the great directors of the time. And Kill Bill is a good way to get into Tarantino, who, you know, he's a pop guy. He doesn't make weird stuff, but it's weird depending on how you think of it, but highly stylized. And I think it would be important to show your kids some of that so they could go down that rabbit hole. And then maybe from there they could get into Wes Anderson or different people like that.
So I haven't seen Pineapple Express or the Kill Bills. If I have a son, should I just hand him over to you and you
can hand him over? give me a weekend. And I'll take care of it. We'll plop them down.
This should open a whole Pandora's box. I'm sure everybody has opinions. We started this out by saying, what are the three shows your son absolutely needs to see and understand before he moves into adulthood? Sort of offered those up in that spirit. And we're looking to get your feedback because we know you have opinions. So boys, any final remarks before we get out of here and let people talk to us?
Yeah. Can my bookie get my tire back?
I don't know. But I bet you could get it back yourself, honestly, if you try hard enough. And if I were to bet on that, I'd bet on it at mybookie.ag.
I'm doing a prop bet. The Juju gets your tire back for you. It's 5,001.
You can do it again.
Hey, like I said, we'd love to get – hey, Pat, thanks for joining us again. And this has been fantastic. We're clearly going to have you back more frequently this season.
Always a pleasure, gents. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here, P. Butch. Always a pleasure. And everybody who is out there listening, thanks so much for listening to our 100th episode. This really is just the beginning. We have bigger and better things in store for this year. A lot more P. Butch, hopefully some more guests, maybe some more content coming out on other platforms and stuff like that. Sorry if this is a long kind of rambly one for you guys, but I think that we hit on some good points here, and hopefully you guys enjoyed the extra content on this bonus celebratory 100th episode of the Steelmen official Steelers Outpost podcast.
Speaking of other platforms, check us out on Instagram at Steelers Outpost. Hit us up on Twitter at Steelers Outpost. Leave us a note on the website at SteelersOutpost.com or send us an email at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. As always, thanks for listening. Go Steelers.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Go Steelmen. Goodbye.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.